Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining today for the Fulbright Scholar in Residence Program call for questions, kind of putting the pieces together webinar. So before we get started, if you're seeing the screen, then the audio portion of the webinar has begun. If you are tuning in by using your computer speakers, make sure that they're turned up and turned on. So you can hear me, and then if you are calling by phone, the call-in number and PIN is there, but if you're hearing me, that means that you know what you're doing. So way to go. Good start. If at any point in the broadcast you can't hear me, just feel free to put a comment in the questions box, and then I can see that, or if you're having other technical difficulties, feel free to do that, and we will address that as soon as possible. Perfect. So. Again, this is the Call for Questions webinar. My name is Cecilia Kaczynski-Mulder, and I will be leading the webinar today. We may be joined by my colleague at the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, named David Levin. But as we're going through here, I will do a little bit of a general overview of the Fulbright Scholar in Residence Program. This is the last in a series of webinars that we've been holding throughout the cycle for applications for the SIR program. So you can find various archived webinar links included on the website. So I would encourage you to listen to some of the previous webinars we had, but I just wanted to make sure that I gave us a very brief overview, brief snapshot about what the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program entails. We'll do a little bit of a walkthrough of our website, as well as kind of getting into, if there is time, to do a walkthrough of the online system. But really, the purpose of this webinar is for all of you who are tuning in. So if you have any questions throughout the webinar, please feel free to type your questions into the question box in the GoToWebinar module. And we'll be able to pick up those questions if it's relevant to the point at which we are at in the presentation. I can address those questions at that point. Otherwise, my hope is that we will leave ample time at the end of the presentation in order to address any questions that you might have. Additionally, you'll see a little bit later my contact information, which is sir@iie.org. That's the best way to contact us with any questions that you might have or any follow-up to this particular webinar itself. And just like with the other ones, we will have an archived version of the webinar available for you after this broadcast is over. In the meantime, I'm very excited to talk to you about the Fulbright Scholar in Residence Program. I really do hope that everybody on the line and anybody listening in the archive will decide to put forward an application. It's a very unique program that we have in that it allows for institutions to take that initiative to apply for the program. Generally speaking, the Fulbright program was established by Senator J. William Fulbright to provide an avenue for exchange programs in order to open the world and kind of provide a venue that is mutually beneficial both to the people of the United States as well as the people of other countries. And with the program, we have various umbrellas to the Fulbright program itself. So I mentioned that it was established by Senator J. William Fulbright back in 1946. It's sponsored by the United States Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, and it's administered by the Institute of International Education. So the branch of the Fulbright program that we're talking about, of course, pertains to the scholars. So these would be academics and professionals who would be coming here to the United States. And as an institution, you would be applying to make that happen. But I would encourage you to take a look at our website to see what all we have that is offered through the Fulbright program. All right, so the Scholar in Residence program itself, as I mentioned, brings scholars and professionals from abroad to campuses that do not often host visiting scholars and or serve underrepresented audiences. When the Scholar in Residences are on campus, they're primarily teaching undergraduate courses. They're also providing cross-cultural or international perspective to your curriculum and to other programs that are on campus. A byproduct of the time that a scholar in residence is on campus oftentimes entails establishing exchange programs both for students on your campus as well as for your faculty and staff members. And so we'll talk a little bit about the benefits as we go through the webinar and talk more about the scholar in residence program. So applications are made, of course, by interested U.S. institutions. And you're applying to either bring a scholar on campus for a semester or a full academic year. The deadline for the program is October 16th, so we always hold this last call for questions about 1 month ahead of time because it gives plenty of time for institutions to sort of polish up your proposals and also to get acquainted with some of some more of the resources that we have available on our website. As I mentioned, this particular opportunity is given to institutions or offered to institutions who have infrequently hosted visiting scholars on their campus. This often includes institutions within our minority-serving institution population, as well as community colleges and small liberal arts colleges. We do encourage rural colleges and universities to consider putting forward an application. Interested institutions from other institution types can still apply for the program, but you might opt to partner with another institution in your area, or when you are applying, you would be sort of outlining or making a case for why having a visiting scholar on your campus or within that particular department might be beneficial for your institutional community. And we can talk through over the phone. I'm happy to schedule a phone call to discuss the program itself and how your institution might be able to benefit from this particular opportunity. So as far as the Fulbright Scholar in Residence grants go, you see sort of a breakdown of the institutions. It's fairly wide open, as you can tell from the various institution types who have hosted Scholar in Residence scholars. You also can look at our website. We have a listing of institutions who have benefited from the program since 2010. If you're curious to know if your institution has had an SIR even earlier than 2010, we can take a look at our archives and try to figure that out. But we definitely encourage institutions who may not have have used the program, certainly in recent years. All right, as far as our timeline, so we are coming on the deadline, which is October 16th. From now until the deadline, I'm happy to read through any draft proposals that you might have. Just send those along to me or discuss the ideas that you have for your particular scholar in residence proposal. Do not think it is too late. There's still plenty of time to apply for the program, and we're happy to help you through that process. In December, our external review committee would meet, and they would make recommendations of which proposals should be funded for the program. In January, the institutional applicants will be notified of the review outcome. From January to February, ECA and the J. William Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board will be reviewing recommended proposals, while our office here would be confirming institutional funding. From January to April, scholars are confirmed and or recruited abroad, and if you are looking to recruit a scholar, the host campus would be given the opportunity to review any nominees that were put forward by the field. From April to June, we would be processing grant packets and sending those off to the grantees, and then usually scholars start arriving on campuses in August. So the fun begins for all of you in that you will be able to see your scholar in residence grant unfolding. So at this point, if you have not already done so, I would highly recommend taking a look at our website. If you just bear with me a moment, I'm going to switch from my PowerPoint here to go to our website. So you can see that here. This is the landing page of the for the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program. I'm going to backtrack just a little bit for you. So if you end up on our regular main page of our website, which is cis.org, in order to find the Scholar in Residence program, you can either enter that into the search box, or you can go to Programs, U.S. Institutions, Scholar in Residence, and it takes you there. The kind of shorthand version of the website would be cis.org/SIR, and that'll take you there as well. So here it gives you that general overview of the program. I want to specifically highlight the application tab here. On the application tab, you can access our online application, which is done through our Embark system. We recently moved into a more enhanced application through the Embark system, so definitely reach out to us if you're having any difficulties with the system as we're working through that. But for institutions who have applied in the past or have started an application, your previous application is available there in Embark. We moved all of those applications into the new platform, so you will be able to access that. But while you're kind of working through your application or if you're trying to work with other officials on your campus, I would highly recommend referring to our application guidelines, which I'll just open quickly now. Our application guidelines provide for you a roadmap through our online application. It also gives more information or expanded information about what we're looking for within certain portions of the program, or certain portions of the application, I should say. So the first part of the guidelines would walk you through the website itself, and then the second part will talk you through the supporting documents. So the real bulk of the application process for SIR would be in the narrative proposal. There are two parts to that narrative proposal, the first being the institutional profile section. So that's where you would highlight certain aspects of your institutional community, from your mission statement to the composition of your student body, as well as your faculty and staff on campus, and then outlining any international initiatives that you might have through your campus and what you're trying to do to further those international initiatives, perhaps through the Scholar in Residence program. The proposed program would be where you would outline the academic program of the scholar. So this is where you can provide specifics as far as what the scholar would be teaching while they're on campus. I don't think that I mentioned it very clearly, but when you're applying for the program, you can either opt to name a specific scholar, or you can request recruitment of a scholar from up to two different countries within the same world region. So a little bit of a tip for you while you're crafting your proposal, and things that we've seen is that sometimes proposals tend to be a little bit too narrow, and then other proposals tend to be a little bit too broad. So, you know, we understand that depending on which direction that you're going in, certainly if you're naming a specific scholar, you are working with that scholar to determine what courses they might be able to teach on your campus. So that's where you can include certain specifics about actual classes that would be taught and so forth. When you're providing or when you're putting forward a recruitment request, when you're writing your proposal, be careful not to make it too broad. In the sense that we still would need to work with our colleagues abroad to locate a scholar that would be appropriate for your proposal. So we understand that the classes that you would be putting forward might not be fully planned at the point in time that you're putting forward your application, and that's simply because you're sort of trying to cast your net out or provide us an avenue to cast the net out to find scholars that might be able to undertake that particular grant. But we still would like to have an idea of what the scholar would be teaching while they're on your campus. So that's that particular section. I would highly recommend reaching out to us. I'm happy to read through that section just to make sure that it makes sense. And to make sure that it's clear, or I would highly recommend kind of asking somebody from a different department on campus to read through it and make sure that everything's clear through what you're proposing to do. If you're naming a specific scholar, you'll be uploading a CV for that scholar as well as two letters of reference. One should be from someone who can speak to the scholar's teaching abilities, so that would be included in the application as well. Please note that the scholar that you're naming won't have to fill out a separate application at the time that you're putting forward your institutional application. Any successful proposals, institutional proposals, we will take those proposals And we will work with our colleagues abroad to reach out to the scholar and ask them to fill out the online application. It's actually better for them to wait because we'll be asking for a bit of a pared-down version of our scholar application. So it's just best to hold off, and we'll reach out to them in that regard. Definitely take a look at our guidelines to also read through the frequently asked questions, and then there's more information about the process, and then specifically taking a look at the common weaknesses cited by our reviewers and recommenders. That's a really good place to start to kind of see where you can strengthen areas of your particular institutional proposal. All right, so I'm going to go back to the website here. All right, back it up. Again, heading to the application tab. This is where I was mentioning that you could see if your institution has recently been awarded an SIR grant, because you will include that information on your application form. All right. There's also information about building the proposals and different opportunities through the program. The Scholar in Residence program is really a unique opportunity for you because you may have these international initiatives that you would like to undertake on your campuses but may not know quite the direction that you want to go with it. Maybe you met a scholar at a conference, and you would like to further collaborate with the scholar. Bringing them on campus for a full academic year, or even a semester, would really benefit the work that you're trying to gain by, collaborating with that particular scholar. Also on our website, I would highly recommend taking a look at the highlights section. You'll be able to see kind of stories about institutions who have engaged with the program, perhaps their institutions in your area or institutions that you might have within your particular network. We also have our FAQs, frequently asked questions, listed on the website as well. So again, if you have any questions, please feel free to enter those into the question box. While we're kind of collecting questions throughout the webinar, I will sort of keep moving here with information about the application itself. So I will log into the online application for you. Hopefully you've done that already. If you have not started your Fulbright Scholar in Residence application, I highly recommend doing that, because that way you would be kind of registered in our system. I would be able to see that you're working through an application form, and if we have any updates or any tools that we might want to share, we would be able to share that with you there. So I would highly recommend starting the online application, because then you can also see what it looks like for the point at which you're ready to apply for the program. So again, this is a new, kind of updated platform here. The application itself largely looks the same as it did before. So you can take a look at that here. As you're working through, it looks like we do have some questions that are coming in. The first question that we have is, if an institution is accepted, is this a status that can be maintained annually, or do you have to reapply each year? So with the Scholar in Residence program, you're putting forward your application for the program for that particular fiscal year. So we make every effort to ensure that the institution will be successfully undertaking their grant in the following academic year. But with the Scholar in Residence program, we do have a little bit of flexibility, because we understand that if we're recruiting a scholar, the timeline might be a bit short to get the scholar on campus at the designated time. So we do have some cases where grants are deferred to another academic year. However, this is just with the caveat that we are making every effort to ensure that we will have the scholar in place, ready to go as proposed in the institutional proposal. So if you do have a successful application in the year or the academic year that you're applying, and then somewhere down the line you would like to apply for another scholar in residence, then you would essentially reapply for the program. But if you have an open recommended slash funded project that we're trying to just get every, you know, put all the pieces together, we would give you the most up-to-date information as far as the status of your application, as far as matching the scholar and everything like that. So, you know, we do have sort of a hands-on approach here with institutions because some institutions may not have hosted a scholar before. Sometimes you're looking to recruit a scholar and everything like that. We understand that there are a lot of moving parts with the program. So, you know, our staff is ready to assist you during that period in time. So if you have specifics, further specific questions to that, please feel free to reach out to me. The next question that we have is it acceptable that different institutions apply for the same scholar? So if, you know, as far as this goes, when institutions are putting forward their application, we are looking and assessing the application based on what the institution is putting forward for that particular program. If we notice that there are institutions that are applying for the same scholar, more than one institution, and they're not in the same area or putting forward a joint proposal, then we would have, you know, we would be reviewing the application based on what the institution's putting forward. So if one of the institutional proposals was rated higher than the other institutional proposal, then we would possibly move forward with that particular proposal with the scholar matched to it and then work with the other institution to find a scholar that would match that particular proposal. But again, these are institutional proposals, so we would be assessing the institution. We would be assessing the institution and how they're putting forward the proposal. The next question is it required that the scholars are currently teaching in their home country at the time of application? So if an institution is naming a scholar, we would sort of defer to them as far as the credentials that the scholar is bringing forward. Since the scholar is primarily teaching undergraduate courses while they're on campus, we would like to see that they have a record of teaching experience to go along with that. Since it is a teaching proposal, we would want to make sure that we have that on record. But if an institution was interested and provided a justification for why that particular scholar would be best to undertake their proposal, then we would defer to them in that case, you know, under the understanding that they've vetted the scholar accordingly and that, you know, whatever they're aiming for as far as the sustainability element of having the scholar on campus would be fully founded. The next question is, if an institutional application does not have a specific scholar in mind, how does the matching process work? Is it up to the sending country's Fulbright office to recommend the institution as a site, or does the office do that? Can you describe the matching process more? I'm happy to do that. It's actually sort of an exciting process, if you ask me. But so at the time that an institutional proposal is recommended, your institutional proposal would be highlighting up to two different countries within the same world region where we would be undertaking recruitment. That particular, so using that institutional proposal and using your academic program of the scholar, and then there's also section I of the institutional proposal in the second part of the narrative proposal where you're outlining information about the scholar. And so we're asking that if you're looking to undertake recruitment that you might outline certain things about what level of scholar you're looking for, if there are any specific disciplines or subdisciplines that you're looking for in a scholar, that you just sort of outline that there because that'll help us in the next point in the process. So once I have your institutional proposal and it's been recommended for funding, I will draft a recruitment memo, which is sort of like a job description. And that particular recruitment memo would outline what we would be looking for in a scholar, and we would share that with our colleagues abroad. So if you were putting forward a recruitment request for Austria and Hungary, I would take that recruitment request, include it with your institutional application, and I would send that along to our colleagues in Austria and Hungary, and I would outline what we were looking for in the scholar. With that particular recruitment request, our colleagues abroad might have slightly different ways in which they reach out to potential candidates. Some will reach out to alternates from the core program. Some will reach out to alumni of the Fulbright program. Some people will reach out to institutions where they know that there might be a particularly strong emphasis on the discipline or subdiscipline that you're looking for, and they would basically look for scholars that might be well-suited for your proposal. Once they find these candidates, they would send at least their CV. Some of them will also send on the full application, but we will receive those CVs, and then any candidates that are put forward from the field, we would come back to your institution, and we would highlight what you know, what the findings of the country that we were recruiting in had found. So it would be up to your institution to ultimately decide who would be best to undertake your grant. All right, so you have that final final say about that information. So it does take some time to match up the scholars to the institutional proposals. So we'll work very closely with your institution during that time, as well as with the Poster Commission in the whole, you know, in the scholar's home country, to make sure that we're bringing forward a slate of candidates for your review. So if you have any follow-up questions on that, I hope it was clear. It is actually my favorite part in the entire process, because it's always interesting to see what our colleagues come up with as far as the scholar themselves. Also, sometimes what happens during that period of time is that your institution also may end up coming into contact with a scholar that you would like to collaborate with, as long as they're from within the country scope that you're looking for within the world region. You could also kind of share that CV with us, and we can see if they might be a good match to the Fulbright program. So let's see. So yes, all of the application materials should be submitted through our online system, through Embark, which I'll kind of switch back to at the moment. Please feel free to continue submitting your great questions. We're happy to answer anything that you might have there. So, you know, on the first page here of the application, and I should reiterate about the application system, in that when you start your online application, you do not need to sit down and fill out the entire application and upload all of the supporting documents all in one sitting. You can save parts of the application, and you can come back. You just keep your login information so you can get back into the system, and you can continue on with your proposal as you're working through it. So, you know, it's really easy to log in and to fill out the application form portion, and you can do that while you're working through the narrative proposal, which would be uploaded into our system here. And as you move through more parts of the application, you'll see that more areas are highlighted here on the left-hand side, so you can easily scroll through into different parts of the application that you may want to focus on at that point in time. So the general information section would be where your would be our application form. You're filling out information about your institution, and if you're doing a joint proposal, you can also include that information here. You're either indicating yes or no, and if you indicate no, if you indicate yes, then the application form will expand to include information related to the joint institution that you're applying with. It's really nice with our new enhanced system in that, you know, it's interactive, the application form itself, so it'll pull up requirements based on your prompts and based on what you're filling in here. So you'll fill in the information about your institution. If you are a minority-serving institution, whether HBCU, HSI, so on, you can include that information here. If you might have what we call an other minority-serving institution, in that you have an institution whose enrollment is at least 50% racial and or ethnically ethnic minority, you can include that there. If you do have, you know, unique types of institution, or if you have unique types of student body at your institution, you can also write about that in the institutional profile section of the narrative proposal. So you can kind of outline the scope of your student body from there as well. So you'll enter in the information about your responsible administrative official here. This would be somebody on campus who would be able to sign off on any academic arrangements. They also would include a letter of support in the relevant section later on in the application form. So here's the information about the U.S. second institution. If you don't have a second institution that you're applying with, you can just skip that particular section, and then you can go save and next. And then you're putting in the proposed program dates. So we are currently soliciting applications for the 2018-19 academic year. So we work, I understand, fairly ahead with the Fulbright program, but this is just because we have our review processes and everything internally, and then we're working with our colleagues abroad. So we just want to make sure that we have ample time to put all the pieces together. So you would indicate that, whether a semester or a full academic year, you can outline that information and note that you can begin, the grant itself can begin, and we usually suggest that the scholar's in place a bit before the start of your academic term, just so that they can do all of their kind of administrative things related to their visa. So then we have a principal contact for academic arrangements. So you would, this would be the day-to-day contact for the scholars, so somebody on campus that they could refer their questions to. It's also the day-to-day contact for us. So anything that we might need or if we need to get in touch with your institution to ask questions, we would reach out to the main contact or the principal contact for academic arrangements. Again, between the responsible administrative official as well as the principal contact here, we defer to your institution as far as what the makeup is. Specifically with the responsible administrative official for some campuses, this could be the president or the provost. On other campuses, it might be a dean or a chair of a department. Again, we defer to what is appropriate for your institution. So we don't have like a specific contact that is required. We're just asking that you include one here. Also in the narrative proposal, you'll outline in the oversight section any individuals on campus who would have some sort of, some sort of role in the scholar's time while they're on campus. So, you might include somebody who's working on the community activities element. Sometimes you have somebody from the HR department who would be involved in getting the scholar into the system at your institution. Sometimes you have somebody in the international office. Sometimes the person writing the application is from a grants office. Again, we defer to your institution to sort of outline what the specific roles that that person would be playing there would be. We often find that the more successful Fulbright Scholar and Residence visits are ones where institutions have more than one person on campus who is working with the scholar, because the scholar will be doing various things while they're on campus and also various things in your outside community. So it's definitely something to consider when you're laying out your particular program. All right, so principal contact for the second one, listing of any financial support. We're asking for the approximate salary ranges there. All right, so this particular section, as far as the scholar request, this will change based on what you are indicating here. So if I put scholar request yes, it'll ask for the biographical information of the scholar here. So you would be entering in their information in addition to supplying their CV as well as the two letters of reference. If you are indicating that you are seeking recruitment, you'll enter no for this particular question. So are you requesting a specific scholar? No. And then if you're not requesting a specific scholar, then you're indicating two countries within the same world region. So in our application guidelines and on our website as well, we have a listing of countries that have engaged with the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program in the past and ones that have engaged with the Fulbright program generally speaking. So if you are looking to host a scholar from a country that is not on that list, it is very important that you reach out to me, because that doesn't necessarily mean it's impossible. What we might do is we would try to see if there was another country in the area that might be able to assist us in confirming the scholar. And if you do, if you are interested in a country that is not on the country list, then we would suggest that you do two things. One, that you're naming a specific scholar from that country, because we would likely not be able to recruit a scholar from that particular country, and that you have sort of a plan B. And you don't have to outline the plan B in the application, but we just ask that you have a plan B just in case. But again, I'll talk through that with you on a case-by-case basis, you know, as we know what specific countries you might have interest in. If you've hosted SIRs in the past, I do see some familiar names on this particular webinar in this regard. If you have hosted SIRs in the past, we ask that you outline them here under the previous awards section. So, you know, even if this is an approximate, we don't need the exact information, we also can fact check on our side. So if you are not aware that you've had a scholar in residence on your campus before, or you're curious, feel free to reach out to us. You can also find that, you know, in the recent past on our website, and you can also check our Fulbright scholar list as well to see if your institution may have hosted a scholar in residence. You also would be including information in your narrative proposal about the outcomes, or how that, you know, how having another scholar in residence on your campus would benefit your academic community. Perhaps they're in a different department or something like that. So, you know, we welcome you. Yes. All right, so previous awards, and then the proposal summary here. We have a 700 character limit, very important. It will get cut off if you're longer than the 700 character limit. But this is sort of your opportunity to provide us a summary of what the scholar would be doing while they're on campus. All right, so it's not necessarily a summary of the outcomes or what you're hoping to gain through it. It would just be sort of in general a summary of what a scholar in residence would be doing on campus. You'll have ample space to outline this in the narrative proposal. So, you know, fear not, we'll also be able to see it there, but we have various parties who are reviewing your application, so some may be looking at it more in a general level, some may be looking at it more specifically, so that's why we're asking you for the summary here. All right, so it looks like we have another question that came through about the funding source. When the institution is listing the salary ranges, are we, the institution, paying the salary of the scholar, or does the grant cover this? I am more familiar with the student Fulbright program. Okay, so with the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program, we do provide a monthly maintenance for the scholar, so we are providing a stipend to the scholar as well as some one-time allowances that can be used toward professional development as well as settling in. So we are covering the scholar while they're on your campus. So we're just, through the salary ranges, we're kind of trying to get a sense of your institution itself. So we're not, that's not something that's going to make or break our decisions regarding your application. It's just a formality based on some of the information that we're gathering for, you know, for the application itself. As far as cost share goes, we do encourage institutions to consider, if possible, to provide some form of cost share. Sometimes that's done through a salary supplement, so they may be sort of topping off the Fulbright grant to get them more, to get the scholar more toward your, you know, your minimum salaries or your salary ranges on campus. But we understand that institutions have different levels of resources that are available to them, so we encourage institutions to think through ways that they could creatively provide some sort of in-kind support. So in-kind support might be providing the scholar housing while on campus, or some institutions might not be able to fully cover housing, but they might put a, you know, help to defray the cost of housing while they're on campus. Transportation is a big one. So local transportation in your area, or perhaps transportation to a grocery store, to things in your area. Also, sometimes institutions are able to provide access to the meal plan on campus. That's also a really good source of cost share. If you have somebody in your institutional community who might be going to a conference, and your institution could cover the transportation to the conference or cover the conference fees or something like that, that could be a way that you could provide cost share. So when you're providing that in-kind support, these would be estimates of in-kind support and ways that you could foresee assisting the scholar. Again, this is not something that's going to make or break your application. It's just something to consider that also enhances the scholar's time while they're there. So hopefully that answers that piece of that question. So there is a section on the application form itself where it outlines the estimates of this cost share, but then you can also expand on it in your narrative proposal. Sorry, had a moment. All right, and then when you're doing your institutional profile essay, you have two parts to the narrative proposal. So there are actually two places to upload the two different parts of the narrative proposal. So part one would be under the institutional profile essay, and this also reiterates what we're looking for in that institutional profile portion. This is the smaller or the shorter part of the institutional narrative proposal. So this is about 4 to 5 pages in length if it's a single institutional proposal, and 7 to 8 for a joint proposal. And then the second section, so you would upload that down here. We do have a file size limit, so just be cognizant of that. That doesn't really come into play with the narrative proposal parts, but that might come into play when you're trying to put together all of your support letters. So your institutional support letters, you would combine that into one document, and you'd be uploading that to the relevant page. And then the second part, so you'd just be uploading that there, and then the second part would be uploaded on the very next page. This is the proposed program and financial support section of the application form. All right, so all of these pages look the same. If you're having difficulty uploading something, perhaps the file size is too large, definitely reach out to me, because after doing the program for a while, I kind of know a few tips and tricks for putting together your PDF file. So I don't want that to be something that is a cause of frustration or hinders you from completing your online application submission. We're here for those technical elements as well. All right. So as mentioned, you would include letters of support for your institutional proposal. So if you're working with different community partners that might be interested in hosting the scholar while they're on campus, perhaps to give just a short guest lecture or something like that, they can do so. They could put forward a letter of support for your institutional application. Please note that any of the letters of support that you're giving does not set in stone the activity of the scholar, or we understand that the schedule of the scholar might sort of expand and grow once they get on campus. We've seen that happen pretty much in every instance, where once the scholar gets on campus, there's such an excitement behind the time that the scholar's there that more people in your community would like to host the scholar to give a talk about their home country or some other aspect of their time in the United States. All right. We also ask for you to submit a sample syllabi or course outline. And this would be, it's not necessarily the specific course that the scholar is going to be teaching, but it would give us a sense of what is going on within your department. So we understand that this might also expand and grow as you're working through your online application and preparing for a scholar to arrive on your campus. We just want to get a sense of, in a snapshot, what your particular proposal might entail. All right. So what I will do, of course I should mention that when you have completed the online application, you will submit your online application. The section here that's review will list all of the fields that you have not filled out. So if you are wondering what you or what, you know, how you're progressing through the online application or what is kind of preventing you from getting that magic submit button, it would outline it all here. So you, it's not really helpful right now because I've filled out basically nothing in the online proposal. But, you know, once you have all of those pieces together, then you can submit your application. Again, that is due on October 16th. And I'm happy to read through draft proposals. You'd have to submit those to me in either Word or PDF format via email in order for me to read through them. I can't access your online application in its entirety until you've submitted it. So that way you can still have the option of going in and making making any kind of edits. All right. So I'm going to go back briefly. You know, we'll still address any questions that you might have, but I'm just going to go back to our PowerPoint presentation here and just touch on a few other things, and then we'll continue to answer any questions that might come through. And again, if you have specific questions related to a particular project that you're looking to go toward, I'm happy to advise on those offline via email. All right, so if they're otherwise related to a particular topic of your proposal, please reach out. So I like to highlight the Outreach Lecturing Fund program here because there are a lot of commonalities between the OLF program and the SIR program in the sense of the institutions that we are reaching out to through the program. So the Outreach Lecturing Fund program is a travel grant program. It's a shorter term visit for a visiting scholar who is currently here in the United States through the Fulbright program. So if your institution is interested in hosting a visiting scholar, perhaps for you know, International Education Week or for some other initiative that you're undertaking on campus, you can search our online scholar directory to see which scholars are currently in country, perhaps from a particular country or perhaps from a particular discipline that you're interested in, and you can invite them to come onto your campus. So we have an institutional application for that these days. So you can fill out the institutional application. You can name a specific scholar there, and then you can host the scholar to oftentimes scholars are coming to your institutional area and not only speaking at your host institution. Some might also meet with community organizations. This all may sound familiar. They may meet with community organizations, K through 12 schools that have special interests in international relations or exchange ideas. We've had a variety of different things. I recently, with a colleague, had gone to Tulsa, Oklahoma, where we followed one of our scholars around on their OLF visit, and they actually gave a talk at a local cinema because it was related to the similar topics to what was going on at the cinema. In fact, she was talking on Downton Abbey, so we have a variety of different types of things that the scholars are talking about while they're getting out into institutional communities. This is also a good opportunity for you to partner with other institutions in your area. In this case, our scholar had made something like 9 different lectures within that period of time, and I believe she visited four or five different institutions while she was in the Tulsa area. So, you know, it's really a great opportunity for the scholar, not only the scholars to get out and explore different areas of the United States, but it's also a really great opportunity for institutions to engage in this manner. I also like to make a special plug for the SIRs in that if you're wondering what an SIR experience might be like, invite one of our SIRs on your campus to give a guest lecture, and then you can talk a little bit about the experiences that they've been having, and it also is a really good way to generate excitement perhaps toward your hopefully successful scholar in residence application and visit. So if you need, if you have any other questions about that, you can email olf@iie.org. And you can also visit our website under the Institutional Opportunities, U.S. Institutions, the similar pathway you took for SIR. You can also access the page related to Outreach Lecturing Fund grants and what you can do to apply for for the program. All right. Perfect. So just a few general reminders. You see my email address here. I've mentioned it a few times. You can also feel free to give me a call. I do recommend emailing me, and then we can set up a call as well so we can talk a little bit more in depth about what you're looking to propose and if you have any particular questions about your proposal. All right, and definitely look over our website to gain more information about the program and to see what resources might be available as you're working through the online application. As I mentioned at the beginning of the webinar, we do have a series of recorded webinars for the SIR program. The first one is kind of a general overview webinar about the program. So it's a little bit more expanded on what I talked about in the beginning part of this presentation. I know I kind of rushed through that, but if you want more information or want to share with other individuals on your campus a little bit more in-depth look about what the Scholar in Residence program is and what the benefits are to your campus and to your campus community, you can take a look at that one or have a listen, I should say. We also have a series of webinars that were given that we're focusing on different institution types that also might be helpful if you fall within one of those particular institutional types. This webinar will be archived after the webinar is over, and you will give us a few days, and you will be able to listen to it to see what was all covered. And if you have other questions, you can feel free to ask there. All right, so thank you all. The kind of a last final call, if you have any questions related to the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program specifically. And I look forward to receiving everyone's applications. I know that's a big statement, but I do enjoy reading them, and I'm glad to read them ahead of time if need be as well. And I look forward to hearing from you throughout the next month and beyond. All right. So again, please refer any other questions you might have to my website, to my email address, I should say. And thank you again for your close attention.